It is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down.
Shoot up, bomb, man!
Here's Carmichael Dave.
All right, welcome back. And Killian will join us in just a moment. I said it earlier. I want to get into the A's ballpark thing. We are the home of the A's. We're super happy to be the home of the A's, truthfully. The organization has always been nothing but classy to us. But that couldn't matter less to you. What does matter is there are a ton of A's fans. In the 916-530-209 in our range. And as a Giants fan, I've often been very I have a lot of respect for A's fans. I should really say as a Kings fan is really where that's where it hits home, because I do see a lot of similarities being the, you know, little brother, the younger brother, whatever you want to call it, little sister, younger sister, you know, always kind of looking up at your neighbors. And I get it. I totally get it. And Killian has covered sports in the Bay Area unlike anyone else, and is just phenomenal at what she does. She wrote an article last week that made you think. And when we talk to Dave Cavill next week, as we are supposed to do, I think a lot of questions that she and our colleague Scott Osler brought up in their articles are things that, you know, Dave's a big boy and he can shift on the fly. I think need to be asked and answered, but we wanted to talk to Ann and get a little bit of a background on what she wrote and on what the situation is. Ann, it's Dave. That's Jay. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. How are you?
Sure. Good morning. How are you?
Doing good. It's Friday, so, you know, I mean, the Lakers got bounced yesterday, so that's good. I mean, from Sacramento. We're doing great, Ann.
That was more than bounce. That was destroyed.
You know, your article was really thought-provoking, and as you know better than anyone, brought a response not only from the president of the A's, but also a lot of A's fans. Let me ask you first and foremost, because all we see is Twitter back and forth and blah, blah, blah. And how was the response overall to you on what you wrote?
Well, I got a ton of response. This is a hot button issue for a lot of fans and a lot of Oakland residents as well, who have kind of been treated very poorly by a series of sports teams. And the A's are the latest one. You know, Twitter is one thing. People who take time to actually write me an email that was some sort of thoughtful response is a different thing. And I got, literally, the email was 100 in favor of kind of telling the A's to take a hike on this plan, to like 2 that supported it. And that's not unusual, because believe me, people love to tell me how wrong I am and to, you know, call me an idiot. So I think that there's just a frustration with the A's, with their use of the term rooted in Oakland, and then going, oh, we're on a parallel path with Vegas, you know, as soon as they, you know, went for a 2-day visit as opposed to the city they've been in for 53 years. People have been waiting and waiting for a realistic, comprehensive plan. And I don't know if you've seen their $12
billion
plan. I mean, one of the biggest real estate deals you could ever imagine. And it's just packed with bells and whistles and talk about art projects and blah, blah, blah. And finally you get to the very last page where it says financial terms. It's a 1-page sheet, and they kind of slip in there. And oh, by the way, it's going to cost taxpayers $1 billion in infrastructure costs. It's kind of nonsense. You know, Oakland has seen tremendous growth over the last couple of decades. It's a destination city. It's a place a lot of people do want to live. It's a place that has really suffered during the pandemic in terms of issues of poverty and hunger. And, you know, I've written extensively about what Steph Curry and his foundation has done in terms of serving meals there. It's a place that has issues of policing, as we know, and social justice issues. So to throw this out there and say, oh, and by the way, city council, you get like 9.5 weeks to take this in, and then we need a vote. And meanwhile, we're going to Vegas and going to Stanley Cup hockey games and going, you know, tweeting out, wow, as our own team is playing baseball. It's just, I think it's just been a very ham-handed and clumsy look from start to right now.
Well, as Ann Keelan of the Chronicle joins us, you said something, and that was in my notes off your article, the parallel paths. Just devil's advocate, because I agree, that can be taken as clunky. Could the meaning that Dave was trying to get across, because I kind of took this that way, and you know far more about this than I do, parallel path meaning on a business standpoint, meaning on an offering standpoint, that when you look at just the pure numbers from a Vegas point of view, from an A's point of view, and you take out the incumbency and the roots, if you will, of Oakland, and you just look at what they're being offered and what's out there, could that have been what he's talking about? And if it was, would you say Vegas and Oakland are kind of on parallel paths from a business point of view?
Well, I wouldn't say that. And parallel path, to me, implies an evenness, you know, like no one's, it's parallel. Right. We're going along at the same rate. And, you know, Oakland has been trying to work with the A's. And let's not forget about who Cavill answers to. He answers to a guy who is completely unaccountable to the public, John Fisher. John Fisher's never held a press conference. He never makes any public statement. He just, you know, packs his pockets with his money. And, you know, why would you trust John Fisher to be in charge of the biggest real estate deal in the Bay Area? Like, the guy doesn't have any experience doing that. That it's just ludicrous to think that someone who has run the A's the way he has would have the faith of the business community of the Bay Area to put this plan together. And in terms of parallel path, I don't think Vegas is offering anything. There's no plan on the table. There's no, for one thing, no one even knows if Vegas is a viable baseball market. It's proven to be a viable sports market, but it's about 125 degrees in the summer. Are you going to have a dome stadium? Are you going to go in there? You know, it's so ironic to me. Anyone who's dealt with the A's internally for the last two decades knows how much they hated being in the Raiders' shadow, how much they hated dealing with the Raiders, how much, you know, they just railed against the Raiders. So you're going to follow the Raiders to Vegas that and be like third in line behind the Golden Knights and the Raiders and maybe the Aces? I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. 50% of baseball revenues come from local regional broadcast deals. Vegas is the 39th biggest market in the country. There's not a lot of money there to be had in the regional television deals. So I don't know where I don't know what is possible in Vegas, but right now it's so transparent. They put out this $12 billion plan. They start to get blowback and they go to Vegas for leverage. It's just, and they say they're not going to Portland, but everyone in Portland say they've talked to them and that they're coming to Portland, and you guys might be next. Who knows?
Ann Keelan from the Chronicle joining us. And I want to go back to City Council, Libby Schaffing crew. Obviously, he took a lot of flack when the Raiders left, but this feels different given some of the public blunders, so to speak, that the A's are going through right now. Do you think the A's are almost letting Oakland City Council off the hook just by some of these public things they're doing?
I do. I mean, and it's not just in the last couple of months. I mean, dating back to their whole, we're going to move to Laney College. And then a couple big announcements. They, have drawings and everything. And then 2 months later, you find out, well, no, that land is not available to them. And it never was. So, there's been so many missteps. And the thing that I think frustrates so many of us who have followed the A's for years, who are kind of get the Bay Area and where it is now, the A's are sitting. They finally have the place to themselves, right? After all these years, they have 250 acres of Bay Area real estate to themselves. And if you can't be imaginative enough or creative enough to to figure out what you could do with that piece of property that has BART access and freeway access. I know how many A's fans there are in Sacramento. I know how many come from Modesto, from Stockton. You know, people don't want to, you know, be circling the port trying to find a place to park. A lot of people come in their cars. And so, you can't imagine building. I mean, it's the Bay Area real estate is at a premium, and you could build a village, you could build housing, you could build retail out, you could build your beautiful little ballpark, put parks in. You could take that piece of property right in the middle of you know, the Bay Area, a prime spot, and turn it into something. And that's what's frustrating, I think, to people who, when they just dismiss that as a possibility, because most people have a kind of an affection for the site, maybe not the Coliseum, but for the site.
And Killian of the Chronicle joining us. And just reading the top sheet, if you will, it's a $12 billion investment, and you hear that it's privately funded. You got the infrastructure, another bill, what around $850, $855, whatever it may be. Let's just call it $1 billion coming back. But on the surface, it sure sounds like, well, hold on, the A's are going in, and they're offering to invest billions of dollars into this area, creating tax revenue, creating housing, creating a lot of this. But then you hear the blowback, too. One thing I was very interested in, I think it was your colleague Scott that wrote quite a bit about it, was talking to the terminal people, Howard Terminal, and how that's a mini city in and of itself. Trucks not going into neighborhoods and clogging up the freeways, and the way it's just kind of a symphony, if you will, of things moving in and out, and how construction would complicate that. Do the A's have a leg to stand on, though, when talking about the what is at least reported to be the massive amount of money they're willing to put in as a private investment?
That remains to be seen. I mean, it's certainly not spelled out in any clear way in their document. I want to know why you would trust John Fisher to spearhead a project like this. You know, back in the day, Lou Wolf, who actually was a real estate developer, had a small share of the team and was kind of the public face. And that's when they were just banging their head against trying to move to San Jose. But he isn't part of it anymore. So I go back to the way John Fisher has run the A's. And I just say, why you would really go into business with this guy on this kind of a massive project? It seems like a very bad idea. And I totally, you know, when you talk about jobs and taxpayer revenue, the port is creating that. I mean, it's the 10th largest port in the United States. And as Scott wrote, you know, it's not like they're going to agree to the, you know, they're not going to, if the, say the city council agrees to the project, it's not like the port's going to shut down the next day, but it's going to create a slow seepage of difficulty and construction and turmoil and just all those things. And Seattle and Long Beach and LA are all perfectly willing to take that port business. And so then the Bay Area would be left without a working port. I think that, have you ever driven down there? It's terrifying. Yeah. Because especially I drive a mini. So, you know, it's like these giant container trucks that are cruising by, and it is kind of a symphony, you know, and you see it when you see the line of huge trucks coming up from the port and the line going down to it. I don't know how all of that works. I just think a working port is way more valuable than a 35,000 seat ballpark to a city.
And Killian from the San Francisco Chronicle joining us. And I want to go back to what you were saying about the Coliseum site, because you laid out beautifully how much potential is there. Yet we hear from both the A's and now Major League Baseball that the Coliseum site is not suitable for new development, so to speak. In your mind, what is it about that site to both the A's and baseball that they can't do anything with?
I don't know. And I think baseball just said it to have the A's back in this so that then the A's can turn to all their critics and say, look, it's not us. Baseball said it. I think they have their sights set on a waterfront ballpark, which is, that's going to be great in Vegas on that parallel path. I wonder where that waterfront ballpark is going to be. But also, you know, the ballpark can't even face the water because it would be facing due west. So it has to be turned. I mean, it's just and all of his, you know, he said some things in public part and some to Scott Cavill about things like, you know, kind of saying that, oh, the only successful ballparks have been built in urban downtown areas. Well, that's not true. I mean, Detroit and Cleveland both have ballparks built in urban downtown areas that aren't exactly setting the world on fire in terms of attendance. Giants, anyone who was down where the Giants ballpark is 30 years ago would never say like, ooh, this is an urban downtown area that's just, you know, it was basically a completely unused part of town that was miles from what you would have considered downtown San Francisco.
Wasn't that the China Basin area? Isn't that what they, forgive me, I'm not in the Bay Area, but wasn't that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of called China Basin, and there was, you know, one bar down on, a couple of piers away. But it wasn't like it all grew up around the ballpark.
Sure.
You know, they just built new ballparks in Arlington that are car friendly. And Cavill says, well, in Texas, they drive in their cars as though, you know, he hasn't noticed that in California, people drive in their cars, too. I mean, it's just I don't understand. They're just putting their foot in the ground and saying, no way, this site doesn't work. Because to me, it's a fabulous site that has all sorts of potential, and including the potential for easy mass transit, which Howard Terminal does not at all, and requires some kind of crazy infrastructure to get people from BART to the mythical ballpark.
And Killian, the San Francisco Chronicle, with us. And just to wrap up, you know, we have a lot of A's fans listening, a lot of fans worried about this team. And on top of that, Ann, we've got a lot of A's and Kings fans. You know, there's a ton of Athletics fans up in the 916-530 area, and they're still very much scarred from the fight for the Kings with Seattle and Anaheim and Virginia Beach from the beginning part of last decade. So you've got this you've got this stigma here of a lot of fans that simply are seeing this back and forth, and they just want the A's to stay in Oakland. So I'm asking you as a veteran and then some of how things work on the sports side in San Francisco, especially, and in the Bay Area, I'm hearing from you, and it sounds like my question was going to be, Ann, what in your opinion is the way for the A's to stay in Oakland? Am I hearing correctly that the Coliseum site is really the only viable option that's on your radar right now?
Well, I've felt that for a long time, but obviously the A's disagree with me, so I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think there's any chance in the world that the Oakland City Council rubber stamps this proposal. And I don't know. It has a feel of a proposal being so over the top that, you know, it's almost like, you know, what you see in Congress where some proposal comes in, you know, filled with pork and so huge that people just kind of like go, oh, my God. And so they accept something that's a smaller version of it. But it takes a while to get there. So I don't know if that's their strategy. It's just to try and hammer out something that's way more realistic with the city of Oakland. It doesn't put taxpayers on the hook for $1 billion. I mean, of course, cities are going to pay some infrastructure costs, but $1 billion is a lot of money, for infrastructure. So I would love to see John Fisher sell the team because I just don't think his tenure as the owner has been great. He hasn't put money back into the team. He isn't visible. He isn't accountable. So I don't. I don't think this saga is anywhere close to being over. And I don't think that the A's are going to pack up and leave anytime in the next couple of years. But, I mean, I can't predict where it's going to end.
You can follow her at Ann Killian, A-N-N-K-I-L-L-I-O-N, on Twitter. And, of course, read her in the San Francisco Chronicle. We appreciate you, respect your work, and have for a long, long time. And thanks so much for getting in our heads. We're going to talk to, I'm hoping at least, knock on wood, we're going to talk to Dave Cavill next week. And I got a whole page full of notes, and I look forward to discussing with him. And, you know, finding out and figuring this out, well, like I said, for a lot of the fans up here, Ann, and really around this area, including the Bay Area where we reach, it's like watching, and I'm not saying you're in this, but watching mommy and daddy fight when it's the A's and the city and all that, and they're caught in the middle, and that's who I feel the worst for, Ann. I feel so bad for these fans. We've been through it in Sacramento, and I hope to goodness there's a happy ending here for everybody.
Well, and Sacramento hasn't really been part of it, but the Oakland fans, you know, think of what they've been through in terms of, you know, the Raiders and then the Warriors. And you know, but the thing is, my sense from many longtime A's fans is, you know, really, like, this is your solution. So there's a lot of frustration down here as well.
Well, we appreciate it. We'll continue to read you and talk to you again soon. Thank you so much, Ann.
Thank you.
All right, take care. The great Ann Killian joining us. And listen, conversations we got to have. I'm really looking forward writing down, and we'll clip this up, and talking to Dave next week. Dave's a smart dude. He really is. He's been getting it in the media and on Twitter lately, but Dave Cavill's a smart dude. I'm very much looking forward to bouncing a lot of this off of him, because there will be another side to that story. And hopefully we can get past all the politics and everything. And for the sake of A's fans, keep that team right there in Oakland. We'll take a break.
That was nice.
Coming up next.
All right, final half hour of the program. We'll start with Ed Crane. We got a big once in a blue moon from Jay Mars. I'm looking forward to this. What's on tap, the crossover, so much more right after this.
The number 12 mid-market sports morning show in the country. It's the Carmichael Dave Show on Sports 1140 KHCK.
Our thanks to the Chronicle's Ann Killian. That interview will be available, of course, at khdk.com. And all shows also archived on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search KHCK. Subscribe to the channel. That's what the kids say. You got to subscribe. You got to hit subscribe. Speaking of you, I don't even want to know, or I don't know, somehow there's a conversation you got into in the YouTube chat, Jay, about jellyfish.
That's me, so to speak, putting out a fire that was going on in the YouTube chat during so that interview. Stupid. Just trying to, you know.
How about listen to the interview and react to it, chatters? Two of you specifically. By the way,
one.
I was stung by a jellyfish.
There's one instigator.
Well, one, yes, there, you're right. But there's one that always takes the bait. I was stung by a jellyfish about 3 years ago in Mexico.
Yeah?
Just wading out to the, you know, they say you should shuffle your feet through the sand, not like stomp, walk. And there's a reason. And I stepped right on one. I was just, everyone was in the ocean. This is why I don't like going into, you know, bodies of water that aren't swimming pools. And I stepped on, I don't even know what I stepped on, but man, the stories are 100% correct. It felt like somebody took a poker from a fireplace that had been lying in the fireplace that was shaped like a needle and just stabbed it into the top of my foot.
Yeah, that's not the story anyone wants to know about. We all want to know the conclusion.
I immediately, my wife looks at me because I was walking towards her and she sees the expression on my face. And the problem when something like that happens is that you don't know you don't know what happened at first, then you don't know what the feelings you're feeling are. For example, I was getting very nervous and kind of sweaty, but that was the adrenaline almost certainly. But you don't know, is this adrenaline or is venom slowly climbing my leg and going to my heart? Am I going to seize and die in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and never see my children again? Like, you just don't know.
Unless.
So I walk back up to the area, and I'm trying to downplay it because I don't want to ruin everyone's time, but I need to find a first aid place because I don't know what they have. I don't know if they have you know, some sort of magic juice that takes care of this. Well, I found it, and apparently it's a popular place for jellyfish where I was at. Neat that they had signs, which they didn't. And they rubbed this, like, brown liquid, not peroxide, but something like that. Part of the stinger, as a bonus, broke off into the top of my foot and had to kind of lodge there. It hurt for months. To your where you want me to go.
Yes,
here. The legend of that the sting pain can be reduced a great deal if people relieve themselves on the sting.
Yes.
I'm here to tell you this. I cannot answer as to whether or not that is true because we didn't do that. But I will tell you this. Had I had previous experience and had I gone through that process and had it been true, the pain was so intense in my foot, I would have, without hesitation, without any issue, I would have simply put on my sunglasses, averted my eyes, and had the entire populace of the hotel formed a single file line in front of me. And if they all took turns relieving themselves on the part of my foot where I got stung, I would have been 100% in favor. Guys, girls, dogs, don't care. Maybe some splashes up and hits me on the leg, don't care. The pain was so intense, I would have happily had people pee on my foot. So I don't know if it's true or not. I do know that
you took 4 minutes to basically say being stung by a jellyfish hurts and no one peed on you?
Nobody peed on me. It was iodine. Thank you, MC. That's what it was. Iodine.
I'm disappointed.
Would you'd rather have the story of people peeing on me?
Yes!
Let me be clear. This
Who
is a
wouldn't?
Kid, this is a kid show. Kids are
Sorry,
listening.
Sorry, soiling.
Soiling because of a jellyfish sting. So I don't know. If somebody's actually had that happen, 1-800-920-1140 or text us or hit the chat line. I am curious if that works or not. Once in a blue moon right now.
Once in a blue moon, brought to you by Blue Moon Beer. Here's Jay Marr.
This story is so apropos for so many reasons. On this day,
yeah,
June 4th, 1974, attendance was lacking in Cleveland, Ohio for Indians baseball game. So what did they decide to do, you ask?
What did they decide to do?
They hosted a 10-cent beer night.
Oh, that's awesome. That's just second to a dozen egg night. Yeah, I got you.
This was in a game against the Texas Rangers. The Indians ended up forfeiting the game after a Cleveland fan rushed the field in the ninth and stole the bat and hat of Ranger outfielder Jeff Burrows.
Yeah, you thought fan issues were bad now.
This was followed by Rangers players rushing out of the dugout with bats in hand, leading more fans to rush the field and begin fighting with not just the Rangers, but the home team Indians as well.
Oh, my God.
All the bases were stolen.
Of course.
Have not been returned, by the way. Seats were hurled onto the field. Other fun fan behavior, including a woman trying to make out with an umpire.
Of course.
Another woman getting into the on-deck circle and flashing the player her boobs.
Mm.
Kids randomly running onto the field in multiple innings. A father-son duo mooning the everyone in the bleachers.
Good. Boobs and butts and kids. That's always
and
a wonderful combo.
Of course, random streakers throughout the game.
You know, one story that's not in there, speaking of, would have been very apropos to use your word to the story we just told. No public urination on the field.
Yeah.
Had to have happened. Had to have happened.
Oh, for sure.
Somebody took
during
a leak
the
on
brawl?
The
brawl.
Yes, yeah. 100%. That is the worst promotion in sports history. The most famous one people remember, the great Bill Veeck, who did Disco Demolition Night, where fans were encouraged to bring any disco memorabilia they could. It would be destroyed throughout the game. Platform shoes with goldfish in them, disco records, blah, blah, blah. The big problem happened between games. It was a doubleheader. When fans stormed the field and set an impromptu fire in the middle of center field, the second game was canceled due to unplayable field conditions.
Yeah, Demolition. I want to say that's like covered in the Studio 54 documentary.
The Dodgers had free baseball day.
Bet that ended well.
Yeah, it ended really, really, really great. Audio-wise, the worst promotion ever was when the Florida Marlins back in 2000, I think it was 2010, had Vuvuzela Night. Remember those weird, like, kazoos, but, like, on steroids? Yeah. Sounded like a giant buzz of hornets. Also, speaking of people on the field, I was thinking about this. I'm glad you involuntarily reminded me of this. With all the fan stuff going on, this might be a little before your time, but I'm hoping you've at least heard the lore. What happens today if Morgana exists? Now, do you remember Morgana?
Mm-mm.
Again, a kid show. I'm going to do my best here. Morgana, I think this was either late 70s, early 80s, or both, was a lady. Oh, God, Dave, don't get in trouble here. How do I even say it? A lady who was top heavy,
mm-hmm.
but and then some.
Uh-huh.
And she would run on the field in a shirt not designed for her figure. In other words, right. There were no trampolines yet, a lot of bouncing. You're picking up what I'm putting down. Okay, mm-hmm. that was part of her thing. And she would run onto the field, and she would find a player, and she would kiss them on the cheek. That was the whole bit. And then she would be let off the field. And I found myself thinking, if in today's day and age, obviously it's not going to be Morgana anymore, although I'd love to know if she's still around. If the same type of thing happened, does Morgana 2.0 just get tackled? Does she ever make it to a player? I mean, it was a thing. Like, people loved it. The crowd would go crazy. You know, she'd be like, I'd hear it. She was a celebrity. Look it up. Go down a YouTube rabbit hole, youngsters, today.
Here's the thing. That doesn't fly today, and just let me tell you why. Mm-hmm. For multiple reasons, but one of the bigger ones is the idea of random fan, doesn't matter the gender, running up to player, given all the issues mm-hmm. that have happened with fan-player interactions over the years in multiple sports. Hell no, she is getting tackled, dude. That's a thing. That would not be okay.
Finally, West Virginia Power owns a minor league team. They wanted to honor indoor plumbing, so they had Salute to Indoor Plumbing Night.
Yes.
In order to let fans know how good they had it, the team originally planned to shut down all the bathrooms in the stadium and force the paying fans to use porta-potties. As you might suspect, this is a massive health code violation. So what they did to create the atmosphere is they held a toilet seat toss. And they mashed up brownies into patties and had a poo toss onto the field.
How'd it work out?
About as well as the West Michigan Whitecaps cash-money drop. How do you think the cash-money drop worked out? I'll bet it didn't. I'll bet it didn't at all. Hey, is line one a jellyfish story? Let me know, please. Please. Hey, listen, the weekend is here. You're almost there, kiddos. Are you grilling? Are you warming up those cool summer nights? Whatever it may be, you're using propane, odds are. And hey, let me tell you, I'm not here to talk to you about amateur pain. I'm here to talk to you about propane. And my friends at Cinch, C-Y-N-C-H, cinch.com. It's a propane exchange service. It's not a subscription. You don't have to, pay a monthly fee or get a bunch of emails or texts on your phone you opt into. Hey, you need propane? No, it's super simple. You go to cinch.com. It takes about 2 seconds to put in your info, your address and your name, billing info, and that's it. You go to cinch.com from there on out, and when you run out of propane, you leave your old tanks on your porch, and they deliver new tanks to your porch. They don't even knock on the door unless you ask them to. They just leave them. You go outside, you're like, oh, my God, it's propane. And then you drag them in and put them in your backyard. That's it. You don't have to lug them around in the car. You don't have to go anywhere. It's so fantastic. They'll even put them on your back porch if you ask, side yard, whatever. They're here to serve you. It's such a good idea. I'm angry I didn't think of it, but I'm super glad to endorse them. Right now, use promo code DAVE, D-A-V-E, and your first exchange, just $10. $10, that's less than half what you pay at the gas station. So enjoy your weekend. Grill it up. Turn on those space heaters, the fire pits. Go to cinch.com, C-Y-N-C-H.com. Promo code DAVE. Yeah! That was, that was-
was nice.
Coming up next.
Was it a jellyfish story? It wasn't. Was it? Oh, man. All right. When we come back, what's on tap? A crossover, and we finish out the week right after this.
Yeah, let's go. Come on.
It's what's on tap. Here's what you need to know, what you need to watch, what you need to follow today. It's what's on tap. Brought to you by...
Oh, who the hell knows at this point?
Wow. Just mailing it in on a Friday, huh, buddy?
Okay.
It's all right.
You know who it's brought to you by?
What?
Morgana.
Yeah, we had a guy call up because I was asking if... I forget what I asked. Oh, it was about the stingrays.
Yeah.
And, well, we got a response on the task line. We'll get to it in a second. But he called up to say, hey, there was a 30 for 30 on Morgana. To which, during the break, Jay said that he was confused. There was actually a 30 for 30 on Maradona. And I'm here to tell you that Morgana and Diego Maradona, the late Diego Maradona, are not the same. In fact, if you wanted to play a game of, hey, what is the opposite of Diego Maradona? Morgana might be that, except that they both did used to run onto fields. And I'm here to tell you, according to Wikipedia, Morgana is still with us, born in 1947, also known as the Kissing Bandit.
That's how we all want to be known.
She was also billed as Morgana the Wild One when appearing as a dancer in the 1980s.
Oh?
She rushed the field on many occasions and kissed baseball players, including Jay, Nolan Ryan, Home Run King Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, George Brett, twice.
Two times?
Steve Garvey.
You know, the Steve Garvey one is really bad in retrospect.
Len Barker and Cal Ripken Jr. She has been described as baseball's unofficial mascot and the grand dame of baseball. She also crashed NBA games where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was one of her most famous victims. Okay.
I love this. Morgana retired at the end of 1999 and now lives in Ohio. She no longer grants interviews, damn it.
Yeah.
But made an exception for the 50th anniversary by giving a phone interview with USA Today stating that there would be a comeback tour.
I mean, good for her. She got in there. She made some money.
All right. Uh-huh. Would you? If she crashed the studio.
Would I let her kiss me?
Yes.
Of course. It's Morgana. Of course I would. My wife would understand.
Would she?
Yeah, I wouldn't make out with her, but I'd let her give me a kiss.
On the lips?
I would be honored, even on, well, you know, was she vaccinated? I don't know. We have to find that out.
Wait, vaccinated for what?
Yes. But no, come on. It'd be an honor. And finally, before we get to the crossover, by the way, what's on tap? Brought to you by, we'll just say brought to you by Morgana. NBA scoreboard tonight, just one game. Having
one
withdrawals
game.
There. The Clippers line is now up to 3 from 2 at the start of the show. Up to 3 in Dallas. Dallas will close that game out. They have, of course, a 3-2 lead. And remember, again, you've heard the stat, the road team has won the first 5 games of this series. When it comes to baseball, the Giants looking for the second win over Jake Arrieta and the Cubs of this series. That's at 6:45 in San Francisco. And in Denver, the Oakland A's right here on the Sporty 1140 at 5:40. Frankie Montas for the A's versus John Gray.
Your favorite player.
Favorite player, John Gray. That's at 5:40. A's looking to, and listen, this is Rockies are 23-34. A's gotta take at least 2 out of 3 of them.
Yeah, the Rockies suck.
No, the Rockies are not good.
I feel good saying that.
Going back to the jellyfish story real quick, we're getting a fun response, and hey, thank you. My dudes, although I have a 714 number, I was born and raised in Hawaii. Kailua is on the east side of Oahu, Trade Wind Central.
Been there.
Come in by the thousands, long tendril-like stingers, talking about jellyfish, 6 feet long. No joke, the sting is painful. Long story short, I can't tell you how many times I have peed on my own sting. Never had anyone else do it. You don't do that. That's not a thing. I'm also maybe regretting sharing the story at this point, but it's Friday, so whatevs. Okay, well,
thank you for sharing.
Apparently it works. Also, I didn't have to go pee at the time. I was too adrenalized. So There was nothing I could do but just get the iodine and bear it. And boy, did it hurt for a really long time. Like, literally 3 months later, if I pressed on it, you could still kind of feel a little bit of it.
Well, now you know what to do next time.
Run. Yeah, not go in the ocean, dude.
Well, not just that.
But... you're the road team. Not doing it. We got a crossover?
We does.
Okay, let's do that, please.
What's happening with Jason Ross and Doug Christie?
I don't know.
Hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Let's find out right now with the crossover. Here's today's crossover.
DC, it was so much fun yesterday on the show to have Edwin Jackson.
Yes.
Former Major League Baseball player. I don't know if it was fair to start our question with him.
It was fair because he knocked it out of the park.
I mean, he's getting ready for Team USA, but he played on 14 Major League Baseball teams, and he got it. He got them all in order.
In order. It was quite impressive.
What a show.
And you could tell, like, he was thinking, okay, when I moved from...
Yeah, it was a slow process, but he got it.
Yeah, what did I say? He went from Miami to some...
It was an upgrade. Great, Atlanta, I think.
Yeah, Atlanta to Miami. I was like, man, that's pretty hot. Atlanta to Miami, that's pretty good. So that leads us to our question, gentlemen.
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of coaching moves with the Kings since the great Rick Adelman was the coach. Your coach.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So what we would like, gentlemen, is for you to name the coaches since Rick Adelman in order.
No mistakes.
To present day,
no
without messing up. Put your phones down. Dave, get away from the computer.
I think Jay gets
back away. Oh, Jay, that is smart. I would not give Dave the computer either.
Good luck.
That's easy.
I'll defer, because Jay is the encyclopedia of this stuff, and I know you got it. So here's what we'll do. I'm looking at the computer. I'm looking at the computer simply to grade Jay on this one. My guess is he will get it. So Sacramento Kings head coaches, look at them trying to... Fine. You want a little trivia? Fine. We'll do some trivia. We'll throw that back at them a little bit later here in a second. All right. List of Sacramento Kings head coaches. So since Rick Adelman, ready and go.
Eric Musselman.
That is correct.
Reggie Theus.
Correct.
Kenny Natt.
Correct.
Paul Westphal.
Correct.
Keith Smart.
Correct.
Michael Malone.
Correct.
Tyrone Corbin.
Correct.
George Karl.
Correct.
Dave Yeager.
Yes.
Luke Walton.
Yes. Oh, my God. He did it. I had no doubt. No doubt. None.
An illustrious list.
None. How much time do we have?
45 seconds.
Okay, gentlemen, you throw a trivia question at us. We're going to throw a trivia question at you. And please, Jason, you might have heard this one before. I don't know. If you've heard this one before, please sit out. This is for the whole room. I believe the year was 1977. In baseball, basketball, and football, there are a grand total of 4 rookies of the year. 2 in baseball, 1 in basketball, and 1 in football, that before offensive and defensive. In 3 of those 4 sports, the rookie of the year had the initials AD. AD. 3 of 4. Name them, please, and have a great weekend. For Ann Killian, Jay Mars, and all of you, I'm Carmichael Dave. Go Kings. Love you. Jim Rome is next. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.